All right, welcome in and welcome to episode 7 of the Cumming and Gillespie LLP Flames Alumni Chronicles. What's going on? It's Pat Steinberg along with you, and Cumming and Gillespie LLP, personal injury and medical malpractice lawyers committed to getting maximum compensation for the injured and their families. Visit CummingGillespie.com. And on episode 7, this week we have got another legend in store for you. It's Theo Fleury time. Yeah, Theo's chatting with Brent Cron and Colin Patterson for the full hour, and we've got lots to get into with the legendary number 14, and we'll do that in just moments time. But first, it is time for This Week in Flames History, brought to you by Village Honda. And I don't think there is any other way to go than this. This Week in Flames History, we're taking you back 21 years ago this week on May 3rd of 2004.
The puck's in the left corner of the Red Wing zone. The Flames have it. Conroy goes behind the net. He's wrapped up by Lang. The puck in the left corner for Aginla. Aginla to the left circle. Aginla shot. Joseph save. Rebound. He scores! Yeah, baby! Yeah, baby! Martin Gilliland scores! The Flames win it! 1-0! Yeah, baby!
Yeah, one of the most iconic goals ever scored in the franchise. The Flames won their second-round playoff series with a 1-0 overtime Game 6 win over the Detroit Red Wings this week in 2004. Martin Gelinas scored the game winner at 19:13 of the first overtime. Mika Kiprusoff made 38 saves for the shutout. Calgary won the series over the powerhouse Red Wings 4-2. Flames would start the Western Conference final 6 days later against the San Jose Sharks. Of course, they'd go on to win that series in 6 games as well. So it was 21 years ago this week when the Flames eliminated Detroit in Game 6 of their second round series in 2004. And that is This Week in Flames History, brought to you by Village Honda, your dealership for life in the Northwest Auto Mall. Okay, the Cumming and Gillespie LLP Flames Alumni Chronicles are underway. And this week it is Theo Fleury. Remember, this program available wherever you get your podcasts on the Flames Talk podcast feed. And let's dive right into the conversation. It's your hosts, Brent Cron and Colin Patterson, sitting down with the legendary number 14, Theo Fleury. And we're starting right from the beginning of Theo's hockey upbringing. Let's dive right into the conversation right now.
So I was born in Saskatchewan.
Yeah, Oxbow, right?
Oxbow, yeah. Yep. And so my dad was one of those hired guns for senior hockey.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So we moved around a lot when I was young.
Yeah.
So I was born, and then we moved to Williams Lake, BC, and my dad played for the Williams Lake Stampeders.
Okay.
In the old, the Caribou Hockey League up there or whatever it was. And there was a lot of ex-pros that played in that thing. So we were there for a couple of years. Then we moved back to Manitoba, and my dad was a recreation director on a reserve boat, an hour and a bit, called Kizikus, right? Cody, like Kamsack area where Jared Stoll's from.
Yeah.
Yeah, around that area. And so he quits that job. He comes back. We're like, what the hell are we going to do now? And sure enough, there was a little town 10 miles north of Binscarth, which was Russell.
Yeah.
And so they called my dad, said, hey, we got a great senior hockey team. Want you to come play hockey? We'll give you a job. And so that's how I ended up in Russell.
Yeah, because I always used to take credit saying, you know, Theo Fleury, you know, from Manitoba.
Yeah, I am.
Right?
You know, I spent, 9 years there?
Yeah.
And then moved to Winnipeg for a year.
Yeah.
And then ended up in Moose Jaw for 4, and then came to Calgary, and I've been here ever since.
Where did you live in Winnipeg?
St. James.
Yeah. Yeah. Where?
I went to Silver Heights Collegiate.
Okay.
Yeah. Which is no longer around now.
Yeah.
And, was like right off, like a block off Portage Avenue where my billets were.
Yeah. Well, cuz you were playing for who?
St. James Canadians.
St. James Canadians. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cuz I'm from Winkler,
yeah,
right?
Mm-hmm.
But my parents, we moved to Winnipeg.
Yeah.
My dad wanted to try to make it in the big city.
Okay.
And we lived just off of Keniston Estates, right across from the Army Barracks.
Okay.
In St. James, right?
Yeah, right there.
Yeah, and some asshole would pull. We live on the 13th or 14th floor, and some jerk every weekend would pull the fire alarm. And we'd have to, I'd have my little, Huggy Bear, Winnie the Pooh, his eyes were scratched out. And my mom's like, take this and run as fast as you can at some jerks, doing it. And, and then we were there for a couple of years and moved back to Winkler, back to the Mennoniteville.
Part of the reason why I moved to Winnipeg was I got to practice every day with the Warriors after school. I would have been a Winnipeg Warrior, but I think the team that year, they won like 9 games the whole year. While I was there, the team got sold to Moose Jaw.
Yeah.
So as soon as the season was over, we packed up shop and all went to Moose Jaw.
Gee whiz. Did you ever get to play in like Flin Flon or Thompson?
Oh,
or
as a kid. Swan River? As a kid.
Yeah.
Yeah, I played all through there. Oh, yeah. The old Whitney Forum? Holy, that was a scary place.
How old were you when you were playing?
I think I was 10.
And
it was still scary.
It was good.
Oh, yeah.
And did you get in any type of circuses playing in those places too when you were?
Not when I was a kid, but when I was in the Western League, every night was a circus. Think about the era that I played in the Western League. Like, I remember my first game in Prince Albert.
Yeah.
I'm 16 years old, 5'3", maybe 130 pounds.
Yeah.
I'm standing on the blue line for the, for the anthem, and I look, there's Baumgartner and Manson just foaming at the mouth, right? and then I remember Manson hit me so hard, I thought I broke every bone in my body, and I said to myself, that can never happen again. That can never happen again. And, so.
Did they have a Smarties box still up there, too, in PA? Like, was
it was nuts.
All
different colors? Oh, yeah, it was nuts.
Oh,
like we lost 16-4 there one night.
Just because of intimidation, too?
No, they won the Memorial Cup that year, and we were just a bunch of rookies,
was
right?
Was Pagano there, too?
No. This was Danny Hodgson. Yeah. And they had 4 guys that scored 60 goals. And then they had one line. All 3 guys had 300 penalty minutes.
Who was on that line?
Dean Bram, Brad Bennett. And I think it was Colin Fraser. Fraser was his name?
Yeah.
Scary. Like, just scary. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, there's a great story. So Brandon goes up there with 13 players. Okay? Bombers playing. So Brandon's warming up. Bomber skates into their zone, grabs the net, and puts it on the red line. Okay? Then he goes in, shoots all the pucks out.
Yeah.
And then goes in, takes a drink of water on Brandon's bench, is just drinking water, and Brandon just skated around for the whole warm-up.
Oh, man. To have that kind of stroke, dare you to do something. Yeah.
Like, it didn't matter where you go. Like, you go into Regina, the Grim Reapers playing. You go into Medicine Hat, Berube's there. Yeah. You go to Saskatoon, it's Wendell and all those lunatics, you know what I mean? Like, it was nuts.
Do you ever get so pissed off you speared one of those guys?
All the time.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Did they ever catch you?
Well, I'm the reason why the warm-ups were separate for a while. Because in the playoffs, I did the slap shot thing. We skated around in warm-up.
Yeah.
And the guy looked at me, and we went around, and I just absolutely pitchforked him and yard sale and brawl. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because I got into the Western League. I was 60, and I backed up for a little bit, and the warm-ups were separate still. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then my first year in 99.
Yeah, they brought it back.
I just remember going to watch Wheat Kings games as a kid, watching the separate warm-up and just dying.
Yeah, like
laughing.
Tony Twist never took a shot in warm-up. All he'd do is just skate the red line. Skate up and down the red line. That was it. I'm like, what are you doing, man?
Oh, that is great.
Like, we have nobody that's going to fight you.
Yeah.
So, like, enjoy yourself. Like, handle the puck and,
Feel the puck for once, right? Maybe throw
just
one
try
in.
It. Yeah. Just try it.
My favorite Tony Twist story is he was playing in St. Louis. And he went to dump the puck in, and he did a high flipper,
yeah,
put himself offside.
That's tough to do. Yeah. That is tough to do.
That takes talent. That takes talent to do that.
That is unbelievable. Yeah. Oh, man.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, nobody crossed the red line, but I mean, like, did you guys, had a pretty, I was looking at your
moves. We had a tough team.
Yeah.
Really tough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, what's his name there?
We had Buckberger, Keen.
Odeline was there too.
Odeline, Jim McKenzie.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Like, oh, yeah. We were scary tough.
Oh, yeah. And then guys putting the foil on before the game? Or
Yeah. Well, and those guys just, like, they love to fight.
Yeah.
Like, Kelly Buckberger comes from, like, 20 miles from where I grew up. And I'd hear stories of him in the off season coming to Russell and getting into bar fights in the bar. Like,
awesome. Was he looking for you?
No.
That is crazy.
Yeah.
I hear those stories like that.
Oh, yeah. Just, like guys have no idea.
No.
They have no idea.
No. You know, and there's no.
It was vicious.
Yeah.
Like craziness.
So. How were you able to play in a league that was that vicious? I mean, you know what? You were an underdog, right? You were your skilled player.
I had Keen and Buckberger and Odeline and Jim McKenzie.
But you still had to look out for yourself.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. Yeah. I got really good with my stick, right?
Yeah.
That's the only way, like, I survived, right? You know?
Did you, before those games, like, you'd be playing against teams like that, that you knew what you were getting yourself into, but did you have nerves before a game?
Oh, yeah. I was like, is tonight that I go out here in a body bag,
yeah.
You know? Oh, yeah, it was ugly, scary.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
But, you know, we're a different breed.
Yeah,
100%. We are a different breed,
yeah.
You know?
Like, I mean, like, in when I was playing in, that, like, 99, we had Goddard, Stephen Pete.
Right.
Darcy Hordachuk.
Yeah.
And Bielak.
Yeah. Oh.
And, I mean, you just said Vandermeer, too. Mm-hmm. Pete Vandermeer. And I remember just when we traded for Stephen Pete, it was the best thing ever because I wasn't getting run over by any stretch.
Right.
But we didn't have any toughness on our team. And Pete, with his, you know, God rest his soul, his he had a high little Mike Tyson voice.
Yeah.
And the first time I met him, he goes, hey, what's up, shit face? And I'm like, I'm 19 and I'm 17, sorry. And I'm like, hello, Mr. Pete. No, you don't. Yeah. Nice to meet you. He goes, here, you're getting a bit of a hard time in that. That won't happen again. And I'm like, all right, sounds good. And the first time he's on the ice, somebody sprayed me with snow and he two punched him to the ground. And he's lying there looking at me while I was still at the puck covered. I'm like, this is going to be fun.
Yeah. Yeah. It was just part of the, you know, the culture back then. You know, you just had a bunch of kids who, you know, are from small town Canada who just love to fight. Like, they just love to. Every team was like that, yeah. Like, every night there was either a 5-on-5 line brawl or a bench clearing brawl. It was just part of the game. Yeah.
People would come to watch, sold out barns.
So when we brawled the Russians in 87, when we brawled the Russians, everybody thought that was like so crazy.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, that was happening every night in our league.
Yeah.
So why is this any different? Yeah. You know what I mean? So. And that wasn't our first brawl of the tournament. It was our third brawl because we brawled some senior team in Switzerland in an exhibition game. We had a bench clearing brawl with those guys. We brawled the Americans in warm-up that year and then brawled the Russians. So
did the Russians know that this was coming? Like, were they prepared?
They started it.
Yeah. How did they start it?
You know, everybody thinks that I was the guy that started the brawl. Yeah,
that's true.
Nice reputation, eh? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But what happened was we were on the ice getting ready to take a face off in our zone, and Everett Santapass and this Russian guy, they just start yelling at each other. And I'm like, what the hell are these guys? So then all of a sudden, Everett Santapass with his glove just absolutely smokes this Russian guy right in the head. With a punch. So we kind of all go over there. I get cross-checked from behind. Steve Chason was playing.
Yeah.
He cross-checked my guy from behind. And then all of a sudden, we got a 5-on-5 going on the ice. And then I looked up, and I just saw both benches coming at us, sticks, gloves flying everywhere, and was like, it was insane.
Could they understand each other yelling at each other?
Yeah. No. Like, our trainer... one punched the Russian coach on the bench. Remember a guy named Wally Tatamore?
Yeah.
It was with Carolina?
Yeah.
Yeah, just absolutely smoked him, knocked him out. He was laying on the ground on the bench. Oh, yeah. It was ugly.
Like, and what were the repercussions of that after everybody?
Well, we got suspended for, I think it was 18 months. And then we went back the next year to Russia.
Yeah.
And we won in Russia.
Where was the
Piestany? So Slovakia, you know Slovakia now?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's where it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was in the Slovakian or Czechoslovakian army. That was kind of their headquarters, was where we had the tournament. And but it was communist Czechoslovakia. We were there. So yeah.
And so like when they turned lights off, was it just the military police coming to split you guys?
No. We just got exhausted. Yeah. It's the only way the brawl stopped. Like we brawled for 45 minutes and then guys were just like done.
Yeah.
You couldn't even throw a punch anymore. Because they'd never seen anything like it. Like that's never happened.
Yeah.
And so the refs are like, those refs never broken up a fight ever. So they ran off the ice. And then they said, let's turn off the lights. Maybe they'll stop fighting. Nope.
It's like two little kids. Just let them tire themselves out and we'll put them to bed. Right?
Yeah.
Was it visors?
Full cages.
Full cages.
Yeah. Full cages. So, yeah.
Oh, man. Oh, man. Oh, man. Who was your favorite player growing up?
My favorite player?
Yeah.
Any small guy that was having success in the NHL. Yeah. So, the Denny Marukes, because he scored, scored 60 twice, right? 60 twice.
Yeah.
Obviously, Denny Savard was one of my heroes. Matt Snazlund.
Did you ever get to meet Denny Savard?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Played against him.
Yeah, I know.
My second exhibition game, we played against Chicago here, and I was in the start. I got the start. Against Denny Savard, snapped his arms right off of his off his shoulders off the opening draw. Yeah.
You'll never forget it.
Yeah. And then I got to play against Mats in the 89 final there. Yep. That was cool. I loved watching him play. He was a great player. So, yeah.
Do you ever get to sit down and have a beer with the guys every once or
well, I don't drink anymore.
No, but have a coffee or breakfast.
With any of those guys?
You
know what? What was really cool about the All-Star Games, not a lot of guys like going to the All-Star Games, but for me, it was seeing, sitting at a table with Stan Mikita and Bobby smokes. Hall and, those kind of guys. Yeah. That's what it was. It was fun to be around, that kind of stuff. Man. So
you're done your junior career. You move on to Salt Lake City.
Yeah.
You guys won, didn't you?
Yeah, we won, yeah.
First year. And that was the IHL.
IHL, man. Yep.
First year there you get in. What was it like going to the IHL? Was it a big
jump
for you?
It was awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was ready.
How many teams were in the league?
Oh, I don't even know. There was lots.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not glamour spots, but it was fun. Going into Peoria, Illinois, Fort Wayne, Indiana, Muskegon.
Yeah.
And so a lot of those teams became part of the IHL. But, Salt Lake was, it was a great, great place to play. Yeah. Like, we put 13,000 people in the Salt Palace.
Really?
Oh, yeah, every night. It was a great, great place. And we had a great team.
Yeah.
It was a really good mix of those grizzled old, 10-year IHL minor league veteran guys. Yeah. And then a bunch of us young guys, and we just kind of molded really well. Rich Chernomaz was the captain. Yeah. He's just a great guy. And Randy Busick was there too, another awesome, really solid guy. And then we had Baxi and Bobby Francis as our coaches. So, it was a really good combination. And, my first game, I had 5 points. I had a hat trick and 2 assists in my first game. I played with Cherno and Randy Busick. Yeah, yeah. So it was great.
You obviously had a roommate there living, or a roommate or two.
No, I lived with Taff, Brian Patafi.
Are you serious?
I lived in his basement of his house. I was only 19 years old. So, but the best part was there was a guy in there named Brent Saperja. Okay. Yeah. And very colorful. Played for the Dauphin Kings. Long time ago. Played for the Dauphin Kings. And so Russell and Dauphin, real close. Yep. So, you know, and his mom lived in Moose Jaw. Okay. Yep. So there was that connection. So he kind of was my guy. And he would come every morning, pick me up, and he had a red Oldsmobile convertible with white leather seats. And he'd have the top down, and we'd be cruising into practice. He'd be smoking darts and have his sunglasses on. And yeah, so I had basically never lived on my own.
Yeah.
Right? I was with a billet. You know, they'd do the laundry, cook the meals, you know, all that. So I had no idea about paying bills, getting a place to live, and all that stuff. So for me, it was really good for me to go and spend, you know, a few months in Salt Lake to just kind of figure out life and all of that. And it was great. Yeah.
When I first moved out, I'd never made a tea on the kettle. I'd never washed clothes. I'll never forget. This is just after I left Jerry Holland's place. I went to a different billet and I was still like not very well equipped for life. Right. And they like to drink tea.
Mm-hmm.
And you know those little porcelain, you know, teapots where you steep the tea, you bake the water hot, and then you pour the tea into these colorful little teapots and you serve the tea? Well, I put that teapot onto the element, right? Yeah. And so I'm sitting there, and like, water's not boiling. Like, what's happening? But the teapot's melting, right? So she comes down, you can smell it. And she's like, what's going on? Oh, I don't know. Like, I just put the teapot on. It's not boiling water. Like, this is a problem here, right? Mm. Just clueless, right? Like, couldn't figure it out.
Yeah, well, you don't know.
All right, we are just getting started with this week's conversation. It's Theo Fleury sitting down with the boys this week, and lots more still to come. But as we continue along on this week's episode, it is time for Flames Trivia, brought to you by OSY Rentals. Make the best use of your oil field production budget. OSY's VaporTight package comes with everything required downstream of the wellhead. Call 1-855-OSY-TANK. And, of course, it is a Theo Fleury-themed question. So here we go on this week's Flames Trivia. So Theo Fleury had 68 goals, 92 assists, and 160 points in his final year of junior, the 1987-88 season with the Moose Jaw Warriors of the Western Hockey League. And that year, with his 160 points, Theo tied for the league lead in points. Who was he tied with during that 1987-88 season? It's a legendary name himself, and we'll give you a few seconds now to come up with the correct answer, or at least try. Okay, here comes the correct answer. Did you get it? The correct answer, Joe Sakic had 160 points that same season, 87-88, with the Western Hockey League's Swift Current Broncos. He had 78 goals, 82 assists, and 160 points. So both Theo Fleury and Joe Sakic tied for the league lead in points that year with 160. And that is Flames Trivia this week, brought to you by OSY Rentals. My name is Pat Steinberg. This is the Cumming & Gillespie LLP Flames Alumni Chronicles. Cumming & Gillespie LLP, personal injury and medical malpractice lawyers committed to getting maximum compensation for the injured and their families. Visit CummingGillespie.com. More of our chat with Theo Fleury as we continue. All right, welcome back. It is episode 7 of the Cumming & Gillespie LLP Flames Alumni Chronicles. Cumming & Gillespie LLP, personal injury and medical malpractice lawyers committed to getting maximum compensation for the injured and their families. Visit CummingGillespie.com. My name is Pat Steinberg, and on this week's episode, it's Theo Fleury who we're talking with, and we'll get back to the conversation in just seconds. But first, it's time for this week's edition of Where Are They Now? Brought to you by Pure Chem Services. And this week, we're catching up with former Flame Kerry Wilson, who had not one but two stints with the Flames during the 80s and 90s, racking up an impressive 263 points in 355 games. Of course, hockey runs Wilsons in that family. Carey's father, Jerry Wilson, played 3 games for the Montreal Canadiens. His son, Colin, spent 10 seasons in the NHL with Nashville and Colorado. And after hanging up his skates, Carey Wilson returned home to Winnipeg, where he ran a hockey development program for 20 years. These days, he's an active member of the Jets alumni and can often be found out on the lake fishing for walleye or enjoying a game of pickleball. Carey Wilson, where are they now? Brought to you by PureChem Services, the expertise to realize higher production and lower costs. Okay, let's get back into the conversation. It is the legend, Theo Fleury himself, in conversation with Brent Cron and Colin Patterson. And we're going back to the late 1980s. Theo drafted in 1987 by the Flames. We go back to the fall of that year and Theo's first training camp with Calgary. Let's listen in.
I came to training camp that year.
Yep.
Fully expecting I was going to make the team.
Like training camp to
Calgary.
Calgary, yeah.
Yep. Because my first year I came, you know, nobody knew who I was,
yep.
Right? And I remember Al McNeil.
Oh, yeah.
Remember we used to play those little tournaments at the beginning of camp? So the one day I had to play against Joel Otto.
Yeah.
And they told Otts to beat the living shit out of me, right? You know?
Yeah. And Otts is so mean, too.
Well,
he could be.
If he,
yeah.
Ask Messier how much fun he was to play against. Yeah. He wasn't.
Yeah.
So anyways, Otts is like on me, and we get into this. And we're going at it, and like I'm not backing down at all, right? And so I got into a few exhibition games, and basically, well, I told this story many times. So, like, I was drafted 472nd.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Because the first year of eligibility, I didn't get drafted. And then the next year, I went 166 overall to the Flames in the 8th round, right? And Ian McKenzie was the head scout for the Flames. And he used to come to Moose Jaw all the time and watch me play. And every time, after every game, Fleury's best player on the ice. Fleury's best player on the ice. So finally, Ian really wanted the Flames to draft me. So he kept bugging Cliff that day in Detroit. Okay, we got to take him now. Otherwise, he's going to go. We got to take him now. So finally he said, Cliff goes, okay, go do your thing. So I get drafted. And as soon as my name comes out of Ian's mouth, Al McNeil's got his Mont Blanc pen. He fires the pen across the table. He goes, we drafted another fucking jockey.
That's so good.
So basically my first training camp, I had to prove that maybe someday I could play in the NHL because the reason why they drafted me was they wanted me to go to Salt Lake because they knew I'd put butts in the seats and all that stuff. But by the end of that training camp, you know, everybody in the organization goes, oh, maybe this kid can play, right? So I come back the next year. I just finished the brawl.
Yep.
I went back, was captain of the junior team. We won the gold medal, signed my first pro contract and came back to the next training camp. I think I might have led the training camp in scoring. Yeah. I think I did. And then I got sent down, and I was pissed. Yeah. Like, I was mad.
Yeah.
So basically the first month I went down there and sulked and I was playing awful. And I think I had 1 goal and 11 assists in the first few games. And so we're playing in Denver and Baxi was all over me, like all over me for a whole month. So we're playing in Denver and we're having a pregame meal. And Baxi comes up to me, he says, come upstairs after pregame meal. He says, I want to talk to you. So I go up there and, basically says, I know you're pissed off and I know you really don't want to be here. You want to be up with the big team. But he goes, there's some things in your game that need work before you can go up there. And he said, basically, when we're in our zone, I want you to play our system while you're in the zone. As soon as you get the puck over the blue line, you do whatever you want.
Yeah.
And that's when I went on a tear after that. Because basically I had the puck the whole entire time, so I didn't have to play defense. So, I came from junior. I had 500 points in junior.
Yeah.
So I didn't really have to play defense because I had the puck all the time.
Yeah.
Right? So when you get to the next level, guys are bigger, stronger, faster. Everybody can play the game. So, yeah, of course I'm going to struggle.
Yeah.
But as soon as he put it as simple as that,
yeah,
as soon as you get the puck over our blue line, yeah, you do what you do best.
Yeah.
And then I went on this tear. I had 74 points in 40 games in the minors. New Year's Eve, we played the Denver Rangers in Salt Lake. And we beat them 3-1. Mike Richter was the goalie. Yeah. I scored all three that night.
Yeah.
And I'm coming out of the shower, getting ready to go party, yeah, you know, New Year's Eve. And I'm coming out of the shower, and Baxi goes, hey, can you be at the airport tomorrow morning? I'm like, for what?
Yeah.
He's like, well, I just got off the phone with Cliff Fletcher. You got called up. And I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Holy cow. So, yeah.
And that's, I was just going to say, because like you played and then you got called up that year.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
So what was your first game like in the National Hockey League?
It was awesome. Played the Quebec Nordiques at, yeah, Saldome, and I think we won 5-1, yeah, was the game. Didn't get any points, but played pretty well. And, yeah, and then the next game, yeah, we played Los Angeles. We were down 5-2 after the second period, okay, to LA at home.
Yeah.
And we're in the dressing room, and guys are fucking joking around and ever, you know, da 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 da. Well, we go out in the third period, we score 6.
And we had a pretty good team.
We had a lot of fun.
Yeah. No, we had a lot of fun guys.
They benched Patter and put me on a line with Joey Mullen and Dougie Gilmore, and I got 3 assists in the third period, and we won.
They didn't want me to get too many points. My contract was coming up.
Exactly right. Yeah, yeah.
We won 8-6, and then the next game was Edmonton Oilers hockey night in Canada.
Yeah,
I scored my first 2 NHL goals against Grant Fuhr, and the rest is basically.
Do you remember those goals?
Like, oh, yeah.
Before we get into your big time NHL career, like a mentor of yours growing up, like who helped you along the way?
Oh well, it was those people in Russell.
Yeah,
like when I got there, like I was 6 years old. It just happened that the 13 best athletes in this little town of Russell were all 6 years old. We're, yeah, all my age.
Yeah.
And then we had 3 incredible fathers who became our coaches and our mentors. And, you know, we really did, like, I played with these guys for 9 years, right?
Yeah.
Played with these guys for 9 years. And, you know, they instilled some great morals and values. Yeah. In those 9 years, we won 3 provincial championships in hockey, 3 yeah, provincial championships in baseball. And so basically, I got the blueprint for success when I was, you know, 6, 7, 8 years old playing on this team. And, you know, I look back on it now, and it really kind of set me up for the rest of my life, because everywhere I went, I had success. I was part of lots of winning teams and winning experiences. And so, you know, that's ultimately what you want your kids to get when they're, you know, why do we put our kids in minor hockey? To create quality human beings.
Absolutely.
Not professional athletes. Yeah. You know what I mean? And so, you know, we just had and every guy that played on that team, like, we're all successful guys.
Yeah. So when you get to the Calgary, did anybody take you under their wing at all?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, all these guys.
Yeah.
I sat beside this guy in the dressing room.
He had a lot more hair back then?
Him and Rick.
Were you bald Patter by then?
No. Him and Rick Walmsley. I sat between him and Rick Walmsley, and two of the greatest guys you could ever shoot the shit with every day.
Oh,
we guided Theo in the dressing room.
Oh, yeah. He'd get me in trouble all the time. Pat would be like, hey, Theo, say this.
Theo would say it, and the guys would jump all over him. Ben Gump and I would just jump back.
Whoa, nothing to do with that. Whoa.
But if it went sort of decent, then we'd jump in and hammer away on it.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I just heard Timmy tell this story on a podcast.
Timmy who, sorry?
Timmy
Tim
Hunter.
Tim Hunter, okay.
Yeah. Call him Timmy. You call him Tim.
Yeah. Mr. Hunter.
Yeah. So, first game, we're sitting on the bench. I'm playing on a line with him.
Yeah.
He leans over and says, hey, kid, you realize you can do whatever you want out here? He says, I got your back. I'm like, are you sure?
Yeah.
Are you sure? He's like, oh, yeah, I got your back. Yeah. 385 penalty minutes later.
And they weren't hooking anymore.
They weren't divided by two. No.
Divide by five. Yeah.
But, you know, for a young guy like me to have that kind of backup, I was just like, and it just relaxed me. And
Did Timmy ever come to you and say, holy smokes, Theo? Like,
never.
Just
not
slow
once.
Down for 5 minutes.
Not once. No.
What was it like being there with Lanny?
Every adjective, every, you know, awesome thing you can say about Lanny has already been said. But what's been said is the truth. Yeah. You know, he was just the glue of the team. Everybody looked to Lanny to how do we react? What do we do next? You know, all of these things. And it was awesome. Yeah. You want to hear a great story about Lanny? When I was 8 years old, we played in a big tournament in Fox Warren, Manitoba, okay?
Where's that? just for the listeners.
Yeah, the booming metropolis.
It's 20 minutes south of Russell. So the final, Elkhorn.
Yeah.
The Kennedy boys, Troy and Sheldon, we're playing against them in the final. We win the game 7-6. I get all seven of the goals. But instead of getting a trophy, we won tickets to a Winnipeg Jets game.
Yeah.
Okay? So we go to this game, and, you know, I grew up really poor, right? So we're at the game. Yeah. We show up for warm-up. I have just enough money in my pocket to buy a program, okay? And it's the Colorado Rockies against the Winnipeg Jets, last game of the season. Whoever loses the game gets the first pick in the draft, okay?
Yeah.
So I sneak down to where the players are. Sure enough, I get Lanny's autograph. 11 years later, him and I are carrying the Stanley Cup around the Montreal for him.
Isn't that unbelievable?
That's
such a great story.
Talk about foreshadowing.
Oh, man.
Hey?
Kidding.
Yeah.
Holy smokes. That gives me goosebumps. You have no idea, too, at the time. The NHL is so far away. You're just
young
kid. You're just like, hey, can I get your autograph?
Well, I sat beside him at training camp my first year. And I remember we were just trying out our gear, you know, just going to go, you know, whatever, out on the ice. So Lanny's doing his skates up. I'm like, been on the ice much, Lanny? He goes, first time I put on my skates all year. And I was like, that's what I'm going to do.
I was windsurfing.
Yeah. To be mentored by that group, you know, the 89 team, like if you just go around the room and the quality of people, just the quality of people, like, from Stu, who made the coffee and fold the towels, all the way up to Cliff, the owners. Like, it was just, like, you couldn't have been part of a better organization. You know what I mean? And not only were you expected to be a great hockey player for the Calgary Flames, but you're also expected to be a really good citizen and, you know, get involved with the community and charity work and all that stuff. And so, you know, that's what makes you an all-rounded human being, right?
For sure.
And, you know, it's the reason why nine of us who played on that team live here in town, is because the relationships that we have, that we had off the ice, became lifelong friendships. And so why would you leave when you have, you know what I mean?
I mean, I would challenge you to look at any other team that's won the cup and, you know, how many guys live in that city now.
Yeah.
Well, it's crazy.
Years
what
after.
What was it like playing for Terry Crisp?
I love Terry.
Yeah.
He's a great guy.
Yeah. He gave me a chance. Yeah. And, you know, he allowed me to make mistakes and learn from the mistakes that I made. He was just kind of a rah-rah guy. Like, we had the same practice every day.
Yeah.
Every day, 35 minutes, same five drills. Yeah. You do them. Get off. it was awesome.
We had one guy who'd screw them all off.
Mark
Hunter.
You guys, obviously, you won the cup. It's a huge, it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
What do you remember most about that playoff run?
Just the whole experience, you know, of what it takes to win four rounds of a playoff. Like, we finished, 40 points ahead of Vancouver?
Yeah.
And they took us to game seven.
Yeah.
And if Vernie doesn't make three unbelievable saves in overtime,
I watched that.
Like,
we
don't have a Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
And then as soon as we got through that first round, like, we lost three games in the first round. The rest of the Stanley Cup playoffs, we lost three games.
Yeah.
Because we swept LA, beat Chicago 4-1, and then beat Montreal 4-2. So, yeah. You know, that they say the first round is the hardest round to win. Yeah, yeah. It's the hardest round to win.
Yeah.
You know, and to get over that hurdle was, you know, epic for us. Yeah. Right.
Was there a game in particular that you remember that you thought that now we're cruising, or was it Game 7 against
Game
Vancouver?
7 after Vancouver? Yeah. I knew once we won that game that we were good to go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Because you have all those ghosts of playoffs in the past where you just can't get over the hump, right?
What was the dressing room like in intermissions?
We had a fun dressing
room. Oh, yeah. But I mean, for that game seven, sorry. For that game seven in particular, like, were you... You remember?
You know...
There's
a bit of...
There was some doubt, I think, you know, like...
There's a little nerves.
I'll never forget when Cliff came on the bus.
Yeah, that was the game before, like,
After we lost the game six, Cliff comes on the bus and he goes...
Kicked everybody else off except the players.
It was just him. Him and us. And that never happened.
Yeah.
Like, Cliff never did anything.
He kicked the coaches off.
Everybody off. Yeah. And he just said, guys, I built this team to win. And
if you don't...
There's
going to be lots of changes next year.
And we're just like...
Oh, boy.
Better win.
Yeah.
And when Cliff got off the bus, you could hear a pin drop.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody else got back on, and we're like,
That's insane.
Yeah. And as a player playing game sevens and you're sitting on the bench, every shot you think is going in, it's like it's just a roller coaster ride of, like, emotions.
Yeah. And then when it went, like, when the puck went
when
in.
It went in, it was just like...
just relief.
Yeah.
Like, even the whole Saddle Dome was just like, it was just like everybody just let out this sigh.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
what do you remember after that game seven? Not much.
I remember everybody in Vancouver saying that Joel Otto kicked it.
Yeah.
To this day.
Yeah.
They say that.
Well, no, Pep was such a precise passer that he banked it in off his skate. Yes.
Actually, an odd sign one for a buddy that lives in Vancouver saying, it bounced off my skate.
Yeah.
Oh,
I'm not good enough to kick it in.
Yeah. That's so good.
Yeah. And then we played LA and we smoked those guys. And then Chicago gave us we split at home. And then we had to win in overtime in Chicago.
Yeah.
When Crispy kissed Al McNeil's wife right on the lips. After we scored.
Climbing the glass.
Oh, no. Chopper didn't like that, or are you okay?
And then we split the first two games at home against Montreal, lost game three in Montreal in overtime. Carey Fraser gave us a penalty in overtime.
Worst penalty ever.
And then, we won the next three right after that. So,
Was this still the old Chicago Stadium, right?
Oh, yeah.
We played
Oregon. Chicago Stadium, the old Forum, Montreal Forum. Yeah.
We played some great buildings like that. Yeah. That Vancouver series in Vancouver, that place was like nuts.
The P&E.
Yeah. And then the Grey Western Forum.
Yeah.
Great place to play.
Yeah.
Which is truly one of the first arenas to get a name, to get sponsored.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And then Chicago Stadium and then Montreal Forum. So four pretty iconic buildings.
Wow.
We played in.
When you were a member of the Calgary Flames, who were some of the favorite players you liked to play against, and who were some of the favorite teams you'd like to score, goalies in particular, score against? I got to ask that.
Right. I always loved playing against the best guys. So Mario, Wayne, Mess, you know, all those guys, right?
Yeah.
You know, and being, you know, one of those skilled forwards, like, that whole series in 91 against the Oilers, I played every shift against Bukaboom and Smith.
Yeah.
The whole series.
You got an overtime goal in that one against Fury, didn't you? I remember you sliding across.
But those guys absolutely beat the shit out of me.
Yeah.
Like, the whole series. It was nasty.
Yeah.
Nasty. We were full baseball swinging, slashing each other.
With oak sticks?
Yeah. No penalty. No penalties.
Yeah.
No penalties.
Yeah.
Like, you go in front of the net on the power play, and they'd be breaking those double fiberglass coho sticks over your back.
Yeah.
No penalties.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Did you wear, like, that extra back, lower, like, the kidney?
He knew he was standing in front of the net all the time. I could dart in and dart out, you know what I mean? Yeah. But he took a beating.
When you, you know, you just mentioned, you know, looking up to Denny Savard, and your first shift against him, you took his arms off. When playing against Gretz or Mario, did you get into any little?
Oh yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Because I'm playing to win.
Because you strike me as a guy that doesn't get too caught up in the moment, right? Like, for me, looking back on my career too, I was so excited to even get a chance to play in the National Hockey League. I got starstruck
right
away, and I was just taking it all in. I don't think I had my feet on the ground right away when I got there, and it took me a little while to get settled again.
See, but I had all those winning experiences to that point.
Yeah.
So I was battle tested already, and I knew what the goal was.
Yeah.
And I knew that if I missed a chance to slash Gretz in the back of the leg or, you know, Mario or whatever it was, then I wasn't doing my job.
Yeah.
Right.
And the puck would end up in your net.
In your net. You know what I mean? So, and I also had Al McNeil talking in my ear every game going, make sure that when you're on the ice with Gretz, you make sure you stick him, slash him, do whatever you can. You know what I mean?
He grew to love you, didn't he?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Because, you know, I played a style that was, you know, and that's...
You couldn't play any other way, though, right?
Like what I find now is, you know, there's five games a year that are really highly competitive. And you know what I mean? Like, every night that we played, it was life or death.
Yeah.
Right? Because playing for the Flames, if I was in the lineup, guess who was sitting out?
Yeah.
Lanny McDonald.
Yeah.
So I can't take a night off. Yeah. Or they're going to pull me out of the lineup.
Yeah.
Right? And vice versa. So we had healthy competition within the team for those bottom six spots that if you didn't play well, you're coming out. You know what I mean?
But even in the top six spots, if you weren't, somebody's there to take your spot.
Well, and you guys held each other to account, too.
100%.
Right? Like, I mean, on the better teams I played on, too, that's the way it was. Yeah. Right? The coaches were there, but the players held each other to account.
And that's what's changed is, you know, the head coach is basically the captain of teams now. That wasn't our case when we played. Lanny was a captain, Pep, and Timmy Hunter, and those guys made sure the culture of the dressing room maintained a certain, you know, balance.
Yep.
Whereas now that's completely changed.
Yeah.
You know, they don't trust the players.
No.
I agree. You know what I mean? And those teams don't win. At the end of the day, they don't win. You look at Torts's record. When he was in Tampa, look at all that leadership he had. He didn't have to do anything in the dressing room.
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden he became this guy who thinks, you know, I'm the guy and, you know, you need to do this and do that. And he took that leadership away from the guys, and he hasn't had any success since because his head got too big.
Yeah.
Right?
What was it like getting traded?
Worst day of my life.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought that I would be here, you know, for the entirety of my career, but I also understood, you know, the finance of the, you know, and towards, what was it, in 96, they actually talked about the team moving, getting out of here, and they had to have a season ticket drive to keep the team here, right? And so I knew the finances, and, you know, Harley Hotchkiss actually, you know, made a point of, we had a meeting, and he said, oh, this is what we can afford to give you. And I was just like, yeah, well, sorry, but I can't do it. And then a couple weeks later, I was traded, you know. But I'll give Coatsy credit. You know, it was between Buffalo and Colorado.
Yeah.
And he made sure that I went to a team that had a chance and a team that had a chance to win. And, you know, I went to Colorado. I walked in the dressing room. I thought I was at an all-star game, not an NHL.
Sakic, Waugh, Forsberg.
Drury. Hayduk.
Yeah.
Dale Hunter, Claude Lemieux, Patrick Waugh, Adam Foote. It was insane.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was such a great team, you know? But it was hard to leave, you know, because, you know, you spend the first almost 12 years of your career doing the exact same thing every single day, you know, and then all of a sudden, you know, it's a new team, a new environment, a new place, and... You know, I went from being traded to getting on a plane and playing the next night.
Yeah. Were they on the road or where did you drive?
No, we're at home. Yeah. We're at home. Yeah. So, But I'd known Joe and all those guys from playing in All-Star games and Team Canada stuff and all that. So it was a pretty easy transition. But I wasn't really well at that time either, like mentally and emotionally and all that. I was struggling with a lot of stuff and that kind of put an exclamation point on what happened towards the end of my career, where I just couldn't get it together and addiction became a big part of my life and coping mechanism, you know what I mean? So, that was kind of the beginning of the end of Theo Fleury's hockey career was at that point.
You've had an amazing hockey career, but it has not been without its struggles, and you go through battles as you get older and wiser and make mistakes. You learn from them, you grow, and you got this. I've been a part of it for just a little bit, but you took it off the ground. You started this whole thing, the Flames alumni, everything that you've done. Breaking Free Foundation, you started that.
Mm-hmm.
What has that meant to you?
Well, so 2009, I write this book.
Before you get, writing a book, how scary is that?
Scary.
It's terrifying. I mean,
it's scary.
I can't imagine. I have your book at home. I'm sitting there thinking, if I'm going to just dump everything out there, I'm like, I'm just going to run now. Like, I don't want to see anybody, right? Get me off the grid. Yeah.
Yeah. But for me, it was a great way to just kind of, tell the world this is what happened, right? Because I kind of disappeared.
Yep.
Like, 1 year I'm in Chicago, the next year I'm like, I didn't tell anybody. Nope. Didn't call my agent. Didn't call the Blackhawks. And so
where's Theo?
I thought it was important to, put this all on paper and just put it out there. And but what happened was I found my tribe by writing that book.
Yep.
Because as soon as the book came out, I got bombarded by people who, would come up to me and say, hey, I read your book. You told my story, me too. Hey, I saw your documentary. You told my story, me too. So something that I thought was uncommon, and I thought I was the only person in the world that this was happening to.
I was alone.
Basically, like I said, I found my tribe. And so I didn't really believe the stat at the time, which was 1 in 3 girls, 1 in 5 boys before the age of 18 would have some sort of unwanted sexual experience. I didn't believe it. And after going across country on the book tour, I realized that it was a real stat, and maybe there was just as many boys as girls who were having this experience. And so I was like, we need to shine a bigger light on this so we get more people coming out and sharing what happened to them. And so I called my buddy up one day and I said, listen, and he's a Serbian guy, and I met him through our kids playing soccer together, and he went through the Serbian-Croatia war, and so he experienced some trauma in his life as well. But I called him up and I said, hey, do you want to go on a walk? And he's like, at 8:30 at night, he said. I said, no. I said, I want to walk from Toronto to Ottawa to bring awareness around the subject of child sexual abuse. So went to a whole bunch of corporate people and I said, I need like 10 grand to go do this thing. Got $0 because we were using the word sexual abuse in the marketing stuff. And they were like, well, sexual abuse doesn't affect my company. I'm like, yeah, 1 out of every 4 people that work for you have had this experience. No, they haven't. No, they haven't. Yeah. So I'm like, okay. So go. Remember Kaylee's in the south there?
Yep.
It's now the pizza place.
Yep.
So we rented that place out. I sold $100 hamburgers. We raised 12 grand, got 8 of my friends, 2 Winnebagos. We went to Toronto, and I basically walked for 10 days to bring awareness to the subject of child sexual abuse without like zero expectations, nothing, you know, just let's just go on a walk and see what happens. And so basically walked 10 marathons for 10 days. So 26 miles a day for 10 days to get from Toronto to Ottawa. And every day people would drive up, pull over on the side of the road, get out of their cars, and you know, their heads would be buried in the pavement, and you could tell that, you know, they were shy, and so they would approach me, and you know, I'd look at them in the eyes and put my arm around, and they would tell me their story, right? And it was like, it was life changing for everybody that was on the walk. Like our lives will never be the same. It was that emotional, powerful, you know, incredible. And we did little rallies in each little town along the way. But what was incredible was when we got to Ottawa, on the front steps of Parliament, there was like 5,000 survivors wearing orange T-shirts, which is our color for our foundation. And it was incredible to be in a space with that many survivors and people who, you know, had that courage to, you know, be a part of this. But what happened was we did sister walks all over the country while we were arriving on the front steps of Parliament. So at the same time, there was a rally in Calgary. And there was a girl I'd never met. Had volunteered to run the Victor Walk in Calgary. And after her experience, she wrote this blog, and somebody sent it to me and said, you need to read this blog. And so I read this blog, and I was, like, blown away. And I'm like, I got to meet this girl. And so the girl is right here, Amber Craig. And so her and I and Kim met for coffee, and we decided we were going to start this Breaking Free Foundation, and here we are. How many years later? Is it 10?
10.
Is it 10 now? Holy cow. But Amber told this incredible story about her own experience with sexual abuse, and yeah. So we, for the last 10 years, we've been supporting not only sexual abuse survivors, but everybody who's experienced, you know, trauma in their life, and providing a space, providing therapy, you know, a ear to listen to, you know, whatever it is. And, you know, it's been a wonderful 10 years, and it's been, you know, like we've actually saved lives, you know.
Yeah.
And I don't know how many foundations out there who actually save lives, but we actually save lives. And that's, to me, that's what it's all about, you know. I saved my life 19 years ago, and so, you know, I'm just paying it forward now, and hopefully, you know, providing a safe space and a safe environment, because, you know, I've been doing this for a long time, and I believe that trauma is at the core of every single issue we have in society. Starts with unresolved trauma. And what that trauma does is it leaves you in emotional pain and suffering. And what is emotional pain and suffering? Mental illness. So how do we deal with the mental illness? Well, we gravitate towards the dark side of life and get involved in addictive behavior as a coping mechanism to suppress the emotional pain and scars that are left behind from traumatic experiences. And so this is the world that we're living in today, is we have a mental health crisis, we have an addiction crisis, but we also have an unresolved trauma crisis. And at the Breaking Free Foundation, we feel that we do trauma better than anybody on the planet.
Well, that was pretty awesome. Some great hockey stories, and of course what Theo is doing now and what he's doing with the Breaking Free Foundation as we start to wrap things up on this week's edition of the Cumming Gillespie LLP Flames Alumni Chronicles. Thanks to Theo Fleury, thanks to Brent Cron, and thanks to Colin Patterson for another outstanding episode, episode 7, now in the books. My name is Pat Steinberg, Cumming and Gillespie LLP, personal injury and medical malpractice lawyers committed to getting maximum compensation for the injured and their families. Visit CummingGillespie.com. Remember, this program available wherever you get your podcasts on the Flames Talk podcast feed, and we will talk to you on next week's episode.